Thanks for joining us again on Nevada Backcountry. Today, David and I are going to be talking about the draw system, tag application process in Nevada. We'll get into some of the draw odds. If you're a newer hunter, where your draw odds are going to be best, what units, what species, etc. And then we'll wrap up with a little more indoor target archery. We'll talk about the Vegas shoot. We'll talk about some of the success the crew that we shoot with had at the recent Winnemucca tournament. Let's talk a little bit about the draw system in Nevada. We are an application state. It's not an over-the-counter state. Talk to me about the draw system in Nevada, how that works.
Well, so the draw system in Nevada is set up on a hunt type. Antlered mule deer would be a type.
Okay.
And under that type, you've got, you could put in for archery, muzzleloader, any legal weapon. And during that cycle, when you are drawing for a particular hunt type, you receive a random number. And this is where some folks get misled on how this draw system works.
Myself included. Yeah, exactly. We just talked about this.
Yeah, we were just chit-chatting about that. So if you put in for, let's say, antlered mule deer, antelope longer than ears, and antlered elk, those are three draw types. And each one of those draw types, you're going to draw a independent number that will put you into a 1 to 500. You'll draw one of those numbers. The person with the lowest number goes first. When that person's number gets drawn, and say it's number one, they take that person, look at their first option or their first choice, because you're allowed five choices.
Right.
And those choices could be a mix of archery, muzzleloader, and any legal weapon. The first person will go, you'll go to their first choice. So they are going to get that first choice tag. So now let's say we go down to draw person number 100. That person comes up. First choice was area 092, a very coveted tag. Those tags are all gone based on the previous 99 people. From there, they go to the person's second choice and say that is area 131, another really good tag. And those are all gone. So they'll go down to the person's third choice. Well, if that person didn't have a third, fourth, or fifth choice, they're out of the draw.
Guilty as charged right here.
So that's why it's important to really think about it and not worry about sometimes, I've got 20 points. I'm not going to waste them on a bad area. If you draw a number one number, a random number of 100, and your two choices are like the top places in the state, the likelihood of you acquiring those tags is pretty slim.
Like we were talking about, I've done this to myself where I have a couple units in mind that I want for elk, mule deer, whatever.
Yeah.
And
everybody does.
Oh, right. And I'll go and I'll say, okay, choice one, I want this season. Choice two, I want this season. And then I kind of go, well, I don't, oh, whatever, I'm moving on.
Yeah.
I don't want any other stuff and I don't put anything else. I've probably cost myself tags over the years doing it that way.
Oh, without a doubt. Folks see themselves as I've got 20 points. I'm not going to waste them. I'm only going to put in for one or two choices. I've got a really good shot this year of getting my 092 mule deer tag because I've got 20 points. They have to understand that draw type. So when you go into the antlered mule deer, you are going in with, hypothetically again, 3,000 people. You are then provided a number, a randomly drawn number, and then that puts you in that 1 to 3,000 group. Somewhere along that 1 to 3,000. With 20 points, your name's in there a lot. The likelihood of you being number one to, say, 100, your odds are much better. But realistically, they're still not super great because it's a lot of individuals putting in for those tags.
Okay.
And that's you have all these apps and websites that you can put in your information. You bring up where you want to hunt, the hunt type. And
quality of animals.
Quality compared to quantity. And these things generate your odds of drawing that tag. The thing that those apps and websites cannot determine is what number you get during that draw for that draw type. So then you go into, say, your elk hunt, and again, you've got 20 points. You're going to get a whole new number for that draw because it's a whole new hunt type. So you right. don't keep the same number because there's a different amount of people for each of these draw types. So you're going to get a whole different number put in line with everyone else. So you've got to understand that there's a lot of nuances involved there, and these apps and these websites can't determine what your number is.
They'll get you 75% of the way there.
They'll give you a good idea, but they're not going to. It's not going to be like, boom, you are 91.3% chance of you're going to pull that 231 bull tag.
Going back to the only picking a couple hunts that you want to go on, that's great. I've done it. I understand the mentality. Hey, I've seen a 380 bull in this unit, or I know this unit inside and out. This is where I want to hunt or whatever. But there are plenty of units in the state that produce quality animals. Maybe get out of your comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah.
That fourth, fifth choice, put something else in there if you want to hunt. I'm not going to knock somebody that says, this is it. I'm 65 years old. I only want to hunt this one unit for elk. If that's your bag, then all means do that. That's fine.
Yeah,
I'm speaking more to my age, you know, late 30s, early 40s. You just want to get out and hunt. Don't handicap yourself by only putting two choices.
Yeah, and don't let your bonus points impede your ability to get out and hunt too, because you feel that,
that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, that you feel like, well, I've got all these points. I'm not wasting them on an archery tag or a muzzleloader tag, or I'm not going to go hunt that particular area because it's finding a 170 plus buck is pretty hard to do. I'm going to go here where there's easier chance or an easier opportunity to locate one of those bigger bucks. You know, if that's your choice, that's great. That's again, you apply how you want to apply. We're just going to try to provide you with some information to where you can still get a really fun, enjoyable, quality hunt in and another location. Maybe you need to get out and go tool around,
see
some
new
of these
country.
Areas, yeah, and find out for yourself, is this going to be a good place? Am I going to have some decent opportunities here?
I would rather hunt, and maybe that's just me.
No, I'm with you. I'd rather be out there too. If it's with my friends, my kids, I don't care. I'm having a blast. If I get a couple stalks in on some animals, that's just bonus time. I mean, it's just great to get out there, unwind, reboot, check out some great country.
Same boat here, and I'll tell you from personal experience, couple seasons not drawing stuff, it's awfully hard to fill a chest freezer 1 6-ounce chucker at a time or yes. whatever. I mean,
that's for sure, yeah.
It might be a whopping 60-inch forky, and that'll fill up the freezer a lot quicker than birds.
Yeah, I've come over to my house. All of the antlers that I've acquired over the years are all in the yard. My wife's turned them into yard art. They don't go in the house. They go in my workshop, some of them, but most of them are she's hanging them out of trees or stuff in the flower bed. And it looks great. I mean, it's super cool. Every now and then the dog comes dragging a set of elk antlers into the grass, but it's like whatever.
That's you met him, a good friend of mine, my neighbor. We walked down into his basement. He's got a stack of everything, caribou, I mean, you name it. The guy's hunted all over the world. I said, well, holy smokes, man. What are you going to do with that stuff? Oh, I don't know. It's not the point of it to him.
Right.
So I respect that. Can't eat inches of antler.
No. And I really enjoy the challenge of the stalk. If the animal's in a spot where I'm like, this is going to be a pretty cool stalk, man, it's going to be tough. To me, it doesn't matter if he's a fork and horn or a 180 class muley. I'm going to go for it just because of the challenge.
I've labeled myself the world's worst trophy hunter before.
Oh, yes. There's no doubt. And I've got no patience as well. I mean,
no.
I'll go up there and I'm like, oh, first 3 days, man, I'm going big. I'm going for the big dog. And day one, hour and a half in, I see a forky 3-point. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go for that.
Game over.
Game over. I'm doing it. That I just have no patience.
Coming up, we'll talk about the draw system a little more, maybe some draw odds, where you stand the best chance to draw a tag this next season, and then we'll conclude with a little bit of indoor target archery on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Diving right back into it, let's talk about the draw system a little more, David, and clear up some misconceptions that people might have as far as how the draw order works and whether or not you are actually costing yourself a tag if you put in for something additional. Go ahead and explain the draw order to me.
The draw order is basically, it's the order in which the draw is conducted. So if you're looking to, your number one tag is a bull elk.
Right.
And you're worried about, well, I don't want to put in for antlerless elk or spike because if I draw one of those, I'm not going to get my bull tag. The new draw order and the new draw system eliminates that. So it'll only hurt you if you're wanting your number one tag for, like, for me, because it's my nemesis animal, is a antlerless elk. And if I put in...
Cow elk is your nemesis.
Yes, I've had four tags, and it's just, I just can't, I don't know what it is.
They've got your number.
They do. It's like, oh, it's that guy. Yeah, so I get up on bulls, I'll get up on spikes, I'll get up on everything but a cow elk.
During the break, I'll show you some pictures. I wouldn't call cow elk my nemesis animal, but I had a hunt where it was, I mean, good 340 class bulls coming into Guzzlers, and, you know, saw bulls, saw spikes, no cow elk.
Yeah, that's me. That's my thing.
All right.
So anyway, the draw. So how the draw goes is there are five different draws, and your first draw that is pulled are all the PIW, the Silver State, and the Junior tag.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So if you're in that category and you draw something, it'll knock you out of anything else that is of that same hunt type that you may have put in for. The second draw goes into antlered mule deer, pronghorn that are horns longer than ears, then antlered elk, than the antlered depredation elk hunts.
Explain depredation real quick.
So depredation is, it do not acquire any bonus points when you put in for it and are unsuccessful. It does not take away from your points for a antlered elk or an antlerless elk, because there are antlerless elk depredation tags. It's a separate hunt to remove those animals from a particular unit.
Right. Okay. I've always thought of it as a problem population, either management goals not being met, or is that accurate or no?
It's more along the lines of, so some of the hunts, the depredation hunts, the elk are potentially causing some agricultural damage to some of the farmers and ranchers. They want them removed or at least decreased to minimize the
impact.
Well, their economic cost of having elk come in and eating all of their hay and alfalfa and what have you. You may have a situation where there has been a large fire or damage to the habitat.
Gotcha.
Therefore, some of the animals need to be removed because animals can't ration their food. They're not like you and I, you know, we can ration our food. They go in, and if there's a plot of land that has suitable food for them, they're going to go in and clean it out. So if there's not enough food for the amount of animals that are in that particular area, then you go into these animals starving.
And that can have a long-term impact on a herd, health issues over time, nutrient deficiencies.
Yes, the disease will come in. All kinds of different impacts will happen. So those are some of the reasons why depredation hunts exist. But again, they do not affect your points.
So you might as well put in for them.
Well, yeah, why not? I mean, I do every year. So the fourth category in the second draw are your sheep. So it'll go Nelson's, California's, and then the Rockies. Okay, then is antlerless mule deer. So as you can see, the antlered mule deer, antlered elk, antelope longer than ears, all goes before all of the antlerless hunts and horns shorter than ears hunts.
So you're not hurting yourself. If you are eligible, you might as well put in for the cow or doe of every species as well.
Yeah, the antlerless hunts are not going to affect your ability to get a antlered hunt. If you end up drawing an antlerless hunt, that just is telling you you were unsuccessful with the antlered hunt. That's all. You had the opportunity. You were just not successful.
Right.
That's all.
Okay. And you used an example that I'm guilty of. I've avoided putting in for a spike hunt just because I thought I would rather draw a bull tag. I had that mentality that if I'm eligible for a bull tag, I need to put in for that. I'm not going to put in for the spike elk hunt and cost myself a bull tag. But as we've kind of talked about this, I've realized, okay, that comes after the bull tag, so I might as well put in for it regardless.
Exactly.
I'm not costing myself anything.
Right, yeah, it's not affecting your chances of getting an antlered elk hunt. It doesn't, because it comes much later in the draw cycle. So it's the fourth draw is spike elk. And then the final one in the fifth draw is your mountain goat and the bear.
And
so,
bears.
And then we also have the new hunt, which came in 2022, which is the one horned desert sheep hunt. So that's basically a animal that has either completely lost one horn on either side, or it has been broomed off to a certain point. And you'd have to look at all the regulations. And we can go into that as we get closer to the putting in for applications. We will discuss a lot of this draw odds and draw opportunities, and all of you listeners, questions that you have about the draw or anything in relation to this process, you can email us at nvbackcountry@evansbroadcast.com. We will answer them on air.
And I think you and I are on the same page on this. I would welcome any questions about specific units. If I've hunted it, if I've scouted it, you know, I've got no problem talking about it. Or, hey, I'm thinking about this unit. What do you guys think? I have no problem discussing that. I wouldn't stray too far from what Endow publishes in those biologist notes on
right.
the unit stuff. So you can always look it up there.
There's some great resources at endow.org. You can get in there. There's all the statistics. Follow the links, and that information is very useful. For a lot of the newcomers to hunting or younger hunters that kind of want to better understand the state of Nevada and what opportunities are out there for them, it's a great resource. Get in there, dive in there a little bit, and then come back to us with some of your detailed questions. Give us enough time to where we can do a little research, and we will answer those on air, and we'll get you guys out in the field, get everybody out in the field and enjoying some backcountry hunting.
Yeah, and I, you know, this is the one thing that I've always appreciated. Unlike other states, Western states, I can think of New Mexico, Arizona, for example. If you try calling a unit biologist down there, don't hold your breath for a call back, especially when they see an out-of-state area code. Nevada, on the other hand, has been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Carrie Huebner, I'll mention her up there.
She's fantastic.
I've spent 30, 45 minutes on the phone with her. She answers everything you want to know. I mean, a very accessible biologist in the state of Nevada.
She's a fantastic biologist. She is passionate about her resource area. She will dial you in the best she possibly can. It's up to you after that to get into the hills and do your own physical research of finding everything. And all of the biologists at Endow that I've had the opportunity and privilege to talk to and interact with have been great when it comes to providing information to get out in the field safely.
And it's a starting point.
For sure.
We have winters like we're having now. Things are going to change.
Yeah.
This will disperse animal populations. Yeah. It'll move kind of their historic areas.
Yeah. And not the season. And my sheep hunt, we had torrential rainfall before the hunt, and those animals were completely shotgunned across the area. It was a completely different hunt than the 14 or so days that we did scouting prior to the hunt, it was a completely different approach. So it's always changing. So that's why it's important to get into your area, understand what the topography is, some of your vantage points, some of your glassing locations. It's not only important, it's a safety issue at times, because if you start walking around just randomly and not really sure exactly where you are, it gets dark, and you end up spending the night next to a piece of sagebrush.
Biologists, apps, all that, it'll get you 75% of the way there. The other 25% is boot leather.
Exactly.
And time in the unit.
Exactly, exactly. All right, so coming up after the break, we're going to be getting into some draw odds, especially for some of you newcomers to the hunting world. We're going to provide you with a little bit of information on where some of your best odds are. And don't forget, tune in to Tom Grisham, 11 to 1 o'clock on Gun Talk on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And we're back. Henry and I are going to be talking about some draw odds. Younger and newer hunters, this is going to be really helpful for you. This is going to be giving you an opportunity with 2, 3, maybe 4 points to choose a good spot to get out and do some hunting. What do you think, Henry?
Well, I did a little bit of research. And again, as we talked about in the past segments, this is like 75% of the way there. It doesn't get you all the way there. You and I were at Sheep Show walking around talking to people. And there's definitely some misconceptions out there as far as what the draw odds are and how you can actually get out, stack the deck in your favor to get a tag. And again, this isn't for those guys, gals listening, where you got 14, 15 points for something. Hey, look, you know the system, you know how it works, you know what you want to put in for. This is more geared towards that 0 to 4 bonus point. You know, maybe you moved to Nevada, you've been putting in for a couple years now, but I was going to go through just what I'll call the Nevada big three. I'm not going to get into the weeds on sheep, goats, bear, any of that stuff.
So let's say you have 3 bonus points going into pronghorn antelope hunt, horns longer than ears for the draw. With those 3 points, you will receive 9 random numbers for that draw.
It's not a one for one.
It's not a one for one. So your draw will go in 9 times. So you will receive 9 separate numbers for that particular draw type or hunt type. So your odds are increasing. So if you have any questions, nvbackcountry@evansbroadcasts.com.
And getting into some of these, I'll highlight a couple units, people without a ton of bonus points built up. I'll kind of go in alphabetical order. And again, I'll just touch on 3 species here in Nevada: antelope, elk, and mule deer, kind of what I'll call the big 3 for Nevada. That's what most people think of.
Yeah.
Antelope archery. We had a conversation with someone at the Sheep Show about the odds of drawing an archery tag versus a rifle tag. You will increase your odds if you are a bow hunter.
Yes.
You have a higher likelihood of drawing a tag. So one of the units I was going to highlight for antelope is unit 4. 043, 044, or 045, and 046, Seventrov's area. Archery odds there, you know, pretty consistently, it's one of the highest draw units as far as chances to be able to draw percentage-wise. And here's one of the things I wanted to point out about unit 4 archery antelope. People say, well, bow hunting, it's a low success rate proposition. It's harder than rifle. Okay. There might be an argument made there that's accurate. However, the last 4 years, 42% success rate in that unit. Not only do you have a better chance of drawing in unit 4, but with a 42% success rate for a bow hunter,
you have a pretty good chance of actually harvesting an animal.
Exactly. One more I'll touch on. Now, this is going to be muzzleloader, unit 17. And you hunted Unit 17 for deer. Yeah. Did you see any antelope out there?
I saw a lot of antelope out there in the lower area, yeah.
So muzzleloader, Unit 17, last 3 years, 80% success rate.
Yeah.
So there's another unit for antelope. All getting right. into the big one, what people, you know, everybody drools over and everybody covets, elk.
Yes.
So let me preface everything I'm about to say with your chances of drawing for elk are going to be pretty darn low until you start getting up into that 12, 13, 14 points. But that being said, we kind of sat down and we looked at some of the units where your draw odds are better. So if you're
with
not
fewer points,
with fewer points, yeah. correct. So if you want to get out and hunt elk and you want to stack the deck in your favor, Unit 7.
Yes.
Unit 7 for archery. Yep. When you start closing in on that 4 bonus point area, you're looking at about 62% draw odds in that unit. Now, that is it's a wilderness, good chunk of it's a wilderness area.
Correct.
It's a hard hunt. It's a remote location. But again, stack the deck in your favor. The draw odds are higher there. Now, kind of piggybacking on, we talked about the spike elk thing. Spike elk unit 11.
That's the Shell Creeks. That is east of Ely.
And for a spike hunt out there, 30% success rate over the last 3 years. Not a bad 1 in 3 hunters is going to come out of there with a spike elk.
Yeah.
So not bad odds there. Couple more I'll touch on. Unit 3 for mule deer for archery.
That doesn't mean if you put in for it, you're for sure going to get it. I did not receive the tag in 2021. It was my fourth choice. And okay. That may have been the reason.
People that put in for, so unit 3, 032, 035 was another one. You know, in that 0 to 4 bonus points range for archery mule deer, very, very high draw odds.
Oh, yeah. Area 10, the Elko area.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of tags there, and your odds are, I mean, even with 1 or 2 points, your odds are significantly high.
Yes.
You know, they state, I think it's 100%. Usually area 10 has tags left over in the second draw. That's one of the few areas that still have second draw odds.
We can touch on that a little bit, that first come, first serve thing. I'll wrap up on draw odds with Unit 17. Again, a unit you know you've hunted.
Yeah.
Draw odds are pretty high. And what's interesting, I actually picked this one because it's a mid-rifle hunt that the draw odds are pretty high on.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to isolate everything. Your draw odds are higher if you're putting in as a bow hunter, but there are a couple rifle or like the antelope muzzle loader where there is stuff out there. If you say, okay, I don't want to commit to bow hunting or right. I want to shoot a gun, shoot a muzzle loader, whatever. There are some units out there where the draw odds are pretty darn high for rifle or muzzle loader. Not as high as archery, but still there.
Yeah. With under, you know, what, 6 points or so, your odds are pretty darn decent to be successful with a tag. Then it's up to you after that to be successful with an animal on the ground.
As my daughter has told me before, it's the idiot behind the bow that's the problem.
Oh, 100%.
Or rifle or whatever.
I tell my kids that I work with and coach when they have an issue, when they're shooting, and they're like, you know, I the bow, I just can't do this. And I'm like, is 100% you.
Really quickly, David, touch on the first come, first serve thing.
The Department of Wildlife has instituted a first come, first serve tag system. So after the first draw happens and the second draw happens, and then the alternates are all taken care of, you still have an opportunity to get in the field. It doesn't mean it's the end of your season. If you didn't draw anything, you still have an opportunity. And there are some really great tags in this first come, first serve system. So after that second draw, there still has to be 2 weeks. If you turn in a tag, the tags will show up on the first come, first serve tab on the endow.org hunt website. It'll refresh and the tags that are available will pop up. And if it's a tag that you want, then you will click it and it'll go into your shopping cart. One thing that is new to alleviate an issue that was occurring the first year that it happened was people clicking tags and letting them sit
adding it to the cart.
Yeah, letting them sit in their cart. It sits in the cart. There's a timer goes on that sits in your cart for a few minutes. If you don't finish the purchasing process, the tag will disappear out of your cart. Individuals were clicking tags and saving tags, and that became an issue. So once you click a tag and it's in your cart, you are unable to click another tag for 7 days.
Okay, 7 days.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you want a tag, add it to your cart, check out with it.
You better make sure it's the tag you want. The other thing is, some of these tags are great. People think, oh, they're just junk tag. 1 year, Department of Wildlife had over 10 sheep tags returned.
No.
Yeah.
No.
There were bull elk tags in 231 and in some of these really coveted locations. You know, things happen. People have family issues. People have medical issues. People have major scheduling conflicts with work and the ability to get time off to dedicate the amount of time they want to put into the hunt. And rather than not provide themselves the time they want to do the hunt, they'll just turn the tag in and say, forget it. I don't want to lose my bonus points. I'm going to turn the tag in before the hunt starts, and I'm going to get my bonus points back, and I'll just put in next year when I think I'll have more time. You'll get 092 mule deer, antlered mule deer tags. Just these areas that are just people drool over. So you got to be diligent and watch those. So if you are eligible, you are able to click the tag, and the computer knows if you're eligible or not. And you have to remember, you click that tag and you purchase that tag, it does take away the bonus points that you have accumulated for that hunt type.
Yeah, because you're getting a tag.
You're exactly.
So those bonus points go away.
Yeah, so you have to be aware of that, as well as there is no non-resident category. So a non-resident can come into this system and purchase a resident tag, and vice versa. A non-resident tag pops up for a sheep or a goat, whatever it might be. A resident can then click that and take that tag.
Briefly, before we go to the break, if I rattled off some of those units and the draw odds a little too quick, or you had specific questions about some of those units we discussed, email us. It's nvbackcountry@evansbroadcast.com. And stay tuned after Nevada Backcountry for Tom Gresham coming up at 11 on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Heading into the final segment here on Nevada Backcountry, if you missed the previous segments, you can go to 99.1fmtalk.com. All of the segments, all the episodes will be up on the podcast tab there. If you missed any of the stuff we've talked about thus far, go there, listen whenever it's convenient for you. A little bit of housekeeping before we dive in here. Muley Fanatic Foundation, fantastic banquet coming up.
Oh, yeah.
I went last year. That's going to be coming up February 11th. I believe it's at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's at the Elks Lodge here in Reno. We will have Chris, one of the heads of the Muley Fanatic Foundation. We'll have him on as a guest on one of the episodes coming up. Last but not least, before we launch into the Vegas shoot, I wanted to bring up this past weekend, the crew you and I shoot with went out and held it down at Winnemucca. I know you took your division, correct?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good for you.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was the Winnemucca 450. The number of shooters that showed up was really great for a first year shoot. Had a lot of fun. The club, the Winnemucca Archers, set up a fantastic venue. All of our shooters that we train with and coach ourselves, they all podiumed. It was fantastic.
I know when I scrolled the NBHA website, when I was looking at the results on there, it was everybody I knew. Seemed like they, like I said, went out and represented extremely well. And I'll tell you, the excitement on one of the shooters, a youth shooter, the look of excitement on her face when I saw her the other night, she won $165. And for a kid her age, that's a ton of money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the top shooters in these divisions, it was a money shoot. So if you placed first, second, or third, you took home a couple bucks. And anywhere from, I think the lowest amount was like probably about 75, because it's all based on a number of shooters in the division and if it's pro division or if it's open division.
Okay.
So the pro division, there's a lot more money in there because it's seeded by the club and generally sometimes by the county or city that the venue's in. Yeah, if you want to make some decent money, get into the pro divisions.
Transitioning off of that, you know, we talked last show about target archery.
Yeah, so if you did not make it to the Winnemucca 450, you have another opportunity to get into some really fantastic shooting and to make some money if that's your goal. Upcoming Vegas shoot, which is a world championship shoot.
As we talked about on the last show, anybody can register for that. You don't have to qualify.
No.
So you can go down, shoot in that. I'll be honest with you. I just registered for Redding. I've talked about that intimidation factor. Yeah. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I had a hard time. It was like, okay, what do I register for? Okay, what target do I pick? All that stuff. Registering for the Vegas shoot, can you touch on that really quickly? So let's say, we'll use me as an example. I want to register for Vegas.
Yeah.
How do I sign up?
Yeah, so you can go into, so the Vegas shoot's actually probably a little easier than the Redding shoot because there's just two simple formats. You have either the flights division, which is most everybody is in the flights division. There's a couple thousand people shooting in that. And then you have your championship division, which is champions, pros. That's big time. The Olympic shooters and stuff.
People who make their living doing this.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And you just get into the NFAA website, or you can go into, it's called The Vegas Shoot, and get into that website. It'll have a link to register. You click in there. You just basically follow the instructions. It's pretty simple. It'll tell you what your style is. And then it just puts you into, you get to choose between Champions Series or the Flights. And then it just tosses you in the Flights. So if you choose Flights.
Okay. And that's thevegasshoot.com.
Yes.
I just pulled that up on my phone. It couldn't be more right. Thevegasshoot.com.
Thevegasshoot.com. It's been going on in Las Vegas for over 50 years, I think. And it's the world championships. You've got shooters coming in there from, I think last year was like 56 countries.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's wild. The shoot has the Korean Olympic shooters, U.S. Olympic shooters, Italian, French. It is quite the event.
Anybody and everybody shows up.
And then
for
you
this
toss
thing.
Vegas in there, and then, oh my gosh, I mean.
And I noticed on there, if you go to thevegasshoot.com, register for the shoot, they have hotel deals on there.
Yeah.
So there are options for lodging that are convenient to the shoot.
Correct.
Yeah. Where do you normally stay at? What's the choice spot?
The South Point is where the event is held. And if you can get a room there, you're pretty golden because it's you're right in the hotel where the venue is happening. We generally do the condos across the street. You can book those as well.
thevegasshoot.com. They'll have all the information where it's convenient to stay. You can look up on a map if you're interested in one of the condos. I wanted to talk about the target for it. So it's a shoot at 18 meters, 20 yards, and it's a three-spot target.
Yeah, it's the Vegas three-spot target. Yeah. You shoot one arrow into each one of those three targets. You don't have to. New format a couple years back is if you end up shooting all of your arrows into one of the three targets, they're still scoreable. Years ago, you had to shoot one into each target for 10 ends. So you'll go retrieve your arrows, come back, shoot three more into the target, go and score them, come back, and you do that 10 times for a total score of 300 points possible. And the center of those targets is a target about the size of a dime, and it's an X. So if you hit the X, it's considered an X and 10 points. So what you are shooting for is a 300 points and 30 X's. That is a perfect score.
Now, how are the X's used?
X's are the final determiner. So in the pro division or championship division, it's amazing how many individuals will shoot a perfect 900 for the weekend.
Well, just about everybody, right?
Yeah,
at that level?
Yeah, last year, I think there were 24 or so individuals shot perfect 900s. So then you'll go to the X counts. And on top of that, I think there were 16 people that shot a perfect 990 X's.
Oh.
So that's what your competition is when you get into the pro division. Pretty tight. It's pretty tight. And then they go into what's called a shoot off or a shoot up. But yeah, so that's
it
the
doesn't
goal.
So
the 300 is great. If you shoot a 300, that's fantastic. If you're in the flights divisions, and there's generally anywhere from, you'll start with flight one, which are your top shooters in the flight division, where I said there's could be 3,000 shooters, and then they'll take every 45 to 50 shooters and they'll create another flight. So then flight two is the next group of 50 people, then flight three, and you can go on for, you know, you can have 50 flights of shooters.
How is the X is used
as a tiebreaker?
It is as a tiebreaker. So if you have two people that shoot 300 for their thing, and the X count determines who actually wins?
Correct. So if one individual, like you stated, shot a 26X and the other one shot a 28X, the 28X person wins.
Okay.
Yeah, because they shot two more X's than you did. So even if they tied, even if, say, hypothetically, you know, just say they both shot a 295 in a tournament,
okay,
it would still come down to your X count. Say person A, who shot a 295 and shot 25 X's, and person B shot a 296 with 10 X's, the 296 still wins.
Score first. X count second. Okay.
Correct. And if they tie there, if they tie with score and X's, then you'll generally go to a type of a shoot-off format. Could be closest to center. It could be best of three ends, best of five ends. So there's different tiebreaker formats.
I've seen the sudden death thing, or not maybe sudden death, but the shoot-off where it's basically one end, three arrows.
That's it. And if they keep tying, they just keep doing it and keep doing it. So like in Winnemucca, we had to do a shoot-off for first place. So it's called a shoot-up. So shooter number five goes against shooter number four in the flights, in who scored on the first day, what your place is after day one. So shooter four will shoot against shooter three, and the winner of that will go and shoot against shooter two, and the winner of that will go to the championship and shoot against shooter number one. So we ended up in a shoot-off for first place for my division.
Okay.
Which most of the divisions did. They went all the way to a championship final shoot-off, which was three ends. You shot three ends, and whoever scored the most after those three ends was the winner.
We are out of here. Another Sunday in the books.
Yes.
If you guys have any questions, again, the email address is nvbackcountry@evansbroadcast.com. We've gotten with the times. We have a Facebook page now. So you can send us messages on there. I can't guarantee that we'll check Facebook as often as we check the email address. But by all means, give us a like, a follow. We will kind of tease some of the upcoming show topics on Facebook.
Yeah.
We'll also answer questions on there as well. And we will discuss the spring bear hunt in Washington. They recently lost the spring bear hunt up there. So we will touch on some of the controversy surrounding spring bear hunts. I know Idaho still does one, but we will cover that in an upcoming episode. Stay tuned on 99.1 and 92.3. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk coming up next at 11:00.